Many people wonder how soon it will be that we'll start living and working in space. And these kinds of predictions have been going on for decades. If you go back in the 1980s, there are people, futurists, predicting that by the year 2000, thousands of people would be living and working in space. And when 2000 came around, that number was a total of 3, the total number of occupants of the International Space Station at that time. So one of the great challenges is, of course, the cost of access to space. And then space is supremely hostile. People like to analogize space exploration with the classical era of ocean voyages. Well, of course, that was dangerous back then, and many people didn't come back, and there were hostile natives and this sort of thing. The difference is, you know, where Columbus landed, he could breathe the air, and there was fruit growing on the trees. And if his ship broke, he can sort of repair it because there was wood and forests. That's just not the case with space exploration. You know, space will kill you in a matter of moments. So, and if you crash land and you happen to survive, you're not rebuilding your spaceship. It just doesn't work that way. So I think we're much farther away from living and working in space than many people would wish were the case. The recent NASA mission called LCROSS, which crashed a projectile into a polar crater, South Polar crater, revealed the presence of water in what they call the lunar regolith. Regolith is just sort of geologist code for rocky soil. And why there? Because there are spots on the moon where the sun has never shone. As they say, where the sun don't shine. If you go to the poles, the sun never gets very high, even at what would be local lunar noon. And if you're in the bottom of a crater with high crater walls, where the rim rises up above the basin, there are parts that are just in perpetual shadow. And so the history of the moon's surface being slammed by asteroids and comets, as we know, contain huge amounts of water. Most of that water would get evaporated on the sun-exposed portions of the moon. But some of the water that would descend into the bottom of that crater, we call it a cold trap. The water lands there and never goes away. And so we suspected water would be there. We have now confirmed it. That is very good for the future of space exploration because you don't want to have to carry everything with you when you go visiting planets. When you go to California, you don't carry for a week. You don't carry a week's worth of food with you and a week's worth of fuel. You expect and you know that there are basically filling stations along the way, that there are eateries when you get there. So in space exploration, space travel, if you go to the moon, you don't have to bring all the water that you need. You can extract it from the soils. And you remember from your chemistry class, water is H2O, 2 hydrogens and 1 oxygen. If you build a mini factory and split that molecule, it turns out if you recombine the hydrogen and oxygen, you get a huge amount of energy. And basically, you get a version of rocket fuel. So you don't even have to bring your fuel with you. You can just fill up when you get there. So it's an important first technological and philosophical step towards space exploration. The moon being Earth's nearest neighbor, that'd be a wonderful place to just go. go on furlough to the moon. It's like, all right, on my way wherever else I'm going, I'm going to hang out at the moon for a bit and take a look at the beautiful Earth sitting looming in the dark sky. Personally, I happen to like the moon as a destination unto itself. I've got no problems with that. Oh, there's a cute little joke where you talk about the moon becoming so colonized that you'd have restaurants and hotels. But one problem with the restaurants is that they have no atmosphere. Just a corny joke among space exploration people.